What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's Resistance in Residence artist is muralist, social art practitioner, educator, and clinical psychologist Susan Green. Susan is also the founder of Art Forces, a political mural project largely focused on Palestine. Susan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Great to finally get you here. The way we always start these interviews is from the very beginning in terms of how our guests got into arts. I know you are from New York. You grew up in New York. I'm wondering, as a young person, what were your first memories involving visual art?
Well, the one that I think is most pertinent to our discussion is New York in the 70s was gritty. And I took the subway a lot, and it was very gray, you know, very run down and dark. And the trains would be covered with graffiti, like the whole entire train bombed. And they would come through the station, and there would be this electricity, light, life would enter. And it just really was shocking in the most amazing and alive way. And I think that's really one of the earliest memories and influences on me, is the way that public art can really change the way a space feels and the way people feel in the space, how they experience themselves in a space. Because in those moments, the train station was transformed. So that's one of my earliest.
And then how did that relate to any early experiences actually making art yourself? I don't know if you think back to that as like being a little kid and being excited to draw or paint or going to school for it?
Well, you know, I was interested in art and drawing and painting and all kinds of arts, dance and theater, music. I was just really interested in it all. But at a very early age, it really struck me that art was often relegated to museums or galleries, which are very restricted spaces and not accessible to everyone. So the other things that really influenced me were murals. And there were some in New York, especially on the Lower East Side, which again, the same experience that I was describing with the trains, when you turn a corner and there was this amazing image, like gigantic faces on a wall that were like five stories high. You know, it just was so impactful and powerful and beautiful and expressive, not only of beauty and, you know, wonderful things, but also of the pain and struggle that people are going through. So when I, you know, I studied art in college and in high school and college, but I really wanted to find a way to do art that was in the community, connected to people, connected to society. And murals seemed like the answer. So I, you know, read as much as I could about murals around the world, painted my first mural in upstate New York, in Binghamton, New York. I did a couple of murals there. And there's just something so amazing that happens when people come together to create something. So that became really a kind of life-sustaining activity for me. It's part of how I can be in this world. Yeah. So I and then I found this book, Toward a People's Art, by Eva Cockcroft, and I carried it around with me for a few years, along with Ways of Seeing. And in Towards a People's Art, they talk a lot about the mural scene in the Bay Area in San Francisco. So that was one of the reasons I moved out here, was to find those people. And I was able to and connect with them, and they became my friends, mentors, and are lifelong comrades Miranda Bergman, for example, Arch Williams, the late Arch Williams, the late Ray Patlan, people are passing on.
And I want to bring it back for one more minute to New York. You said your first murals were in Binghamton. Can you describe the subject matter of those murals and also how the subject matter came together? And later we're going to bridge this into talking about how subject matter comes together for you now. But I want to stay there for a moment.
Okay, yeah. So there was a lot of gentrification happening in Binghamton. And so that became one of the subjects that I worked with a lot. And so there was a mural in downtown Binghamton, one of the first that I painted, that depicted buildings that were being torn down by developers. And that was that's a lifelong concern and interest of mine is gentrification and housing. And so and in that mural there was a large figure that was stepping out of a river. Then in Binghamton there are these two rivers that come together at the confluence of this Susquehanna and Shenango rivers. And so this figure is stepping out of the rivers, and she had a flower growing out of the palm of her hand. It came from a dream I had. And then there were the depictions of these buildings that were being torn down. And, you know, and I was, you know, involved with different groups that would go to city meetings and try and argue and defend, you know, against this happening. And largely we failed. But so the mural became a kind of memorial to the buildings and depiction of this struggle. And that's something else that has become over time a big interest of mine too, is memory and the way that public art can be an act of community mourning.
Yeah, so you establish yourself as an artist in your own right there, and then you pack your bags, pack your paintbrushes, come to the Bay Area. What was your first entry point? Like, You find people painting murals and you say, can I paint with you? Or
you want to hear the story?
Yes.
Okay, so I came, there were a couple of trips out here, and on one of them, I was out like for a couple of months or something. And I went to a health food store on Haight Street, and I saw a sign that said muralists, or, you know, volunteers sought for some mural. And the number on the sign was for Arch Williams. So I called him up, and he was in the book, The Tours of People's Art. And so, and he was very accessible and friendly, and we got together. And he, you know, told me about what people here were doing. And when I came back again, that wasn't when I moved here, but then soon after that, I moved and got back in touch with Arch, and you know, the world sort of opened up. Met a lot of people, like the Plaka project in Bomi Alley was dealing with the issues of U.S. colonization and Latin America and Nicaragua in particular, and that was a large group of people that worked together to paint murals up and down the alley. And Plaka means to make a mark or to make a sign. And that was one of my earliest mural experiences here. You know, and one thing kind of led to another. And I think that's where I met Miranda Bergman, who I'm still really close to.
And just briefly, can you introduce us to Miranda for those of us who don't know?
Yeah, Miranda as a very long time artist, muralist, who's painted murals around the world and is working now on a project that I'm working on called the Samud mural in Oakland. Miranda's painted in Nicaragua and Palestine and a lot of murals that you definitely have seen in the Bay Area.
Excellent. Thank you. And we are going to get back to the conversation about Samud and the project that you're working on right now. But that said, I want to take a little bit of a hard left. I know you want to talk about the muraling process, but I want to learn more about you and what brings you into that space. And I learned that you also became a clinical psychologist.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what your decision-making process was going into that, as well as also, are you a practicing psychologist? And then lastly, earlier you were talking about murals as a form of creating memory and processing grief and mourning. And I wonder if there's a relationship between the psychology work and the mural, muraling in that world as well.
Yeah.
But first of all, what brought you into psychology work?
I think I wanted to know more about people. So I was a muralist and an artist first, and then I went to school at San Francisco State and got a master's degree in interdisciplinary art. And I had just come back from 3 months in occupied Palestine. And I just really wanted to know more about the relationship between creativity and resistance and resilience and memory and mourning and how these things all intersect with each other. And for me, and I am a practicing psychologist, I have a private practice, these things are very intertwined, and I experience my work as a therapist as a very creative one, and where the relationship is really central to the work. And I feel the same about the work I do as an artist and as a muralist. And that's true even if I'm working by myself on something. You know, I just, as time goes on, I feel like more and more that relationships are really central to who we are and how we understand the world. And in the psychology practice, it's really a kind, like through the relationship, I think people can be transformed. And I feel like that can be true in public spaces as well. It's not exactly the same, of course, but through the relationships and working together, the environment can be so transformed, and it changes the way people, as I mentioned earlier, think and experience themselves. And that's really, in some ways, especially true when I'm working with kids, you know, like the kids in occupied Jerusalem, in Silwan, where I work on a project that's been going on for about 5 years. The way that the murals have changed the space and how the kids experience themselves in a space that's very, very militarized and colonized. You know, their neighbors are settlers, and they're Jewish settlers, and there are military personnel walking through the streets all the time. And it's very violent, and the kids see a lot of violence and are on the receiving end of much of it. And the murals, it does impact how they experience themselves in that space. And they are very proud, like they say how proud they are of their neighborhood, in a way that they didn't so much before, because it's their neighborhood now. That's like they've made their mark. It's like Plaka. They've made their mark.
Mm. Well, I want to make sure to include a conversation about storytelling and mourning and how art holds those, how you think art can hold those things in communities as we move forward in the conversation. I'm wondering if you can introduce our listeners to Art Forces, an organization that you founded, I believe, around the same time that you became a clinical psychologist.
Yeah, that was in about 2001. Art Forces is kind of it's a project-by-project organization, largely. There's some people that I've been working with now, though, for decades, you know. It's a way to function in the world, you know, as an organization, and sometimes that's really, really necessary, you know. And so one of the most powerful projects that Art Forces has done was in Olympia, Washington, and that was the Olympia Rafa Solidarity Mural Project, which started in about 2010, and I believe you know that project, Jesse. And I learned so much through that about community mourning, and the mural is a memorial and a celebration of the life of Rachel Corrie, who was run over by a bulldozer, an Israeli-driven U.S.-made bulldozer in Rafah in 2003, and when she was 23 years old. She was there with the ISM, International Solidarity Movement, and was involved in protecting the home of a Palestinian pharmacist, the home from being destroyed. And there were a lot of bulldozers around, and she stood in front of the house, and the bulldozer did not stop and ran over her and then backed up. So that project is ongoing, actually, you know, and that's another thing about the murals and storytelling is that the projects are about activating a space that the community takes over, and it's their space. I mean, I do go up to Olympia once in a while, but my role is minimal, and the community uses the space for gatherings and for demonstrations and poetry readings and, you know, concerts and arts walk celebrations twice a year. So, the mural is alive, and the images are added over time, and so it's a kind of living wall. And there's also an audio program, so people can call the wall and hear a minute or two of each of the participants in the mural. And there's over 200 organizations and individuals from all over the world that contributed images, all in solidarity with Palestine. And Corey is in the mural, and the Rachel Corey Foundation for Peace and Justice is a partner. But it's not only about her, it's about her aspirations, it's about her dreams to create a relationship between Olympia and Rafah.
Well, and I'm wondering, for listeners who are not familiar at all, can you give us just a 30-second visual description of the various leaves and what that Olympia Rafah Solidarity mural looks like?
Sure, yeah. Well, it's 35 feet high by 100 feet long. So it's a large space, and there's a large, very large tree in the center. And then people who participated in the mural gave us images that form the leaves. So each of the leaves is 4 by 8 feet. So from a distance, you know, you see this tree and leaves. And then when you get closer, you can see more of the details of the images that are in each leaf. And some of the leaves were painted in Olympia. You know, local organizations and artists would come to this space and they could paint. But a lot of the images were digital because people couldn't travel. Either it was not affordable or they weren't allowed to, various things. In other words, there's a lot of images from artists in Rafah who could not travel to the U.S., were forbidden to. So we were able to, because of, you know, the use of technology, blow up the images from a small file to 4 by 8 feet and install it on the wall. So there's a way that the mural kind of bridges different movements and also large, seemingly, in some ways, you could say, large distances. And then there's the apartheid wall is along the bottom, and it's being broken up by waves. And there's, but the dominant image is the tree and the leaves.
Speaking of trees and leaves, we only have about 2 minutes left, and I want to make sure to respect your time. But I want you to bring us into 26th Street in downtown or uptown Oakland. Another whole mural dedicated to Palestine on the street that you were involved in a handful of years ago involving trees and leaves. And then the Sumud project that you're involved with right now, which is also a collaboration with organizations not filling in leaves, but filling in rocks and spoons.
Yeah. So the Oakland to Palestine mural was painted about 10 years ago. And there were several organizations involved in that, and Art Forces, SPF Foundation, NorCal, Sabil, and others. Forgive me for my lack of great memory. And the idea there was each artist, there were 9 artists, would paint their version of a tree. And so different artists from the Palestinian diaspora. We have an artist from Gaza, and then artists from the U.S., Aaron Yoshi, Vile One, Irat, and Dead Eyes, and myself. It was a way to bring a lot of people together where within which each person could maintain the integrity of their own vision. So it's like jazz, kind of, where there's different notes and people are playing different lines of music, and together it forms something. So that's one of the ways I kind of visualize the murals. And that mural also has an audio program where you can call the wall and hear about why each person painted their tree in their way and what it has to do with Palestine and how it connects to their struggle of their community in different parts of the world. So, for example, Aaron Yoshi talks about her history as a Japanese American citizen and how her relatives were interned in the camps during World War II. So there's everybody made a connection in this way. And, you know, for example, and I talked about being an anti-Zionist Jewish person. That was one of the things I spoke about in relation to my image. And then the new mural that's ongoing, which is right across the street and builds on, in some ways, the Oakland to Palestine mural in terms of color and content, is more focused on activist organizations, and there's over 30 of them who've come together in different ways to paint images on different themes throughout a space that's about 4,000 square feet. And one wall builds on an image by Emery Douglas of a person with a slingshot. And so the rocks coming out become very large, and inside each rock is an image. And the other side builds on the self-liberating prisoners from Gilboa prison in Palestinian prisoners who are in an Israeli prison who dug their way out with spoons. And so that is the motif for the other side. And it kind of, each side meets in the middle and at the liberation wall. And the point, one of the points of this mural is really, again, to create a space that will be activated, that people can use, that the community can use. It's one of the sponsors is the Uptown Auto Body Shop, and they're amazing supporters of Palestine and public art. And so when the mural is completed on evenings and weekends, it will be a community space.
Well, that's beautiful. Susan, I know I need to let you go. I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
And we will be certain to bring you back on the air once the Samud mural is ready to show off to people.
It's a large organization, a large collaborative project. And follow us on Instagram. And there's a GoFundMe campaign because, of course, we're trying to raise money. Okay, thank you.
And we will have those links in the show notes from this show at kpfa.org. That's the voice of this week's Resistance in Residence artist, muralist, social art practitioner, educator, and clinical psychologist, Susan Green, who also founded Art Forces, a political mural project largely focused on Palestine.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.